Hi, everyone. So Marsha was talking a little bit about gait mobility and the get up and go tests. So this maybe segues a little bit into what I'm talking about today, which are falls amongst the older adult population. So her program is probably really useful to the population that I'm studying here. So I'm looking at something which has been examined before. It's broadly the theme of depression, or what I'm calling depressive symptomatology, and falls, both injurious and non-injurious falls. And I'm looking at the relationships between these two things over time. And I'll explain a little bit why I think that's important. I have no relationships to disclose. So just as a really brief summary, some 40 million older adults, several million have depression, have been measured as having depression, and then maybe up to five times that many have reported depressive symptomatology, things like restlessness, difficulty sleeping, tiredness, fatigue, feeling blue in the past week. We do know from prior research that depressive symptoms can result from a number of things, like adverse life events, the loss of a loved one, the onset of an acute illness, unplanned loss of employment, but also things like daily chronic stress or hassles, things having to do with disability, activities are harder to do, social withdrawal, things of that nature, and that these things increase with age. So this is a population to be interested in, and also that these symptoms tend to be both underreported and undertreated, particularly amongst the older adult population. And they're also risk factors for future health problems. Now, we also know that falls are a large problem in the older adult community. About a third are measured as having fallen in a given year. This is in the community-dwelling population. Institutionalized older adults fall a little bit more. But there may be joint risk factors for these two things. Executive functioning, cognitive impairment, that is sort of processing of information, or what sometimes called dual tasking. So when we walk and talk at the same time, if we're talking with a friend while we're walking and we stumble over a crack in the sidewalk, we're able to recover more quickly and process that information, or see a crack in the sidewalk, and this may not be the case for older adults. The reason I'm doing this study is that prior studies on this relationship between depressive symptoms and falls haven't accounted for the potential reverse relationships between these two things. So depressive symptoms are ostensibly linked to future falls, but falls are ostensibly linked to future depressive symptoms. So if you're just measuring one and one regression equation at a time, you may have biased estimates. So I'm using a specific type of model to try to address this endogeneity problem. So I have several hypotheses for the study. The first is that falls, as I mentioned, will be associated with future depressive symptomatology, simply because someone who falls may be in rehab and withdraw socially, or just have daily hassles or stress associated with the inability to do typical activities. But also those with injuries, which are obviously more difficult to deal with than non-injurious falls, will have greater increases in depressive symptoms. And then finally, the reverse relationship, that increased depressive symptoms will be associated with subsequent falls over time. So I'm using a study you may have heard of, the Health and Retirement Study from the University of Michigan. I'm using three waves. This study started in 1992 and actually surveys the panel study. It's done every 2 years. They also have some supplemental studies. So they have this participant lifestyle questionnaire, which has a number of variables, psychosocial variables. So I'm able to use things such as social support from family and friends and neighborhood social cohesion, which could very well be predictors of depressive symptomatology and possibly falls. So I'm left in this three-wave study with just over 13,000 older adults. So to go sort of briefly through the methods, in order to address this reverse causality problem where the relationship can be reciprocal between depression and falls, I'm using what are called cross-lag panel analyses. These use structural equation modeling, which you may be familiar with. And these models are theorized to estimate causal relations between two endogenous variables, so meaning variables which can be both predictors and outcomes in a relationship. So I have two models. The first are what I'm calling NIFs, non-injurious falls, and the second are FRIs, or fall-related injuries. I'll give you a visual depiction of what these look like. As many of you probably know, the structural equation models have two components, a measurement model, which involve latent factors and observed items, and then structural models, which I'll be using to assess the three hypotheses. I'll also show you visually what it looks like, but I'm controlling for some baseline characteristics in the first wave of the three-wave study. And I'm interested in what are called the cross flags, the structural coefficients between depression and falls. I used M plus to do this, and for variables in M plus, which are endogenous but dichotomous, they use weighted least squares, and these produce probit coefficients, which aren't very easily interpretable, so I do something with that later on. And then for the continuous variables, depressive symptoms, it uses linear regression. We use the typical goodness of fit indicators for structural equation models, as you'll see. And so I compute predicted probabilities to better interpret the results at the mean and plus or minus one standard deviation of depressive symptom levels. So as I said, there are three waves, 2006 through 2010, two different models. I control for 2006 characteristics involving latent constructs of social support and neighborhood social cohesion, but also one on poor health status, because all of these things might be predictors of both falls and depressive symptomatology. As an example of the sample, I would hazard to say fairly representative of the older adult population in the U.S. If you add up the non-injurious falls and fall-related injuries, about a third of the sample had a fall. Social cohesion was fairly high, meaning the respondents had trust in their neighbors if they needed help. Spousal support is one example of the different types of family and friends. Social support was fairly high. And negative social support was actually low, so this is reverse coded. So the 3 out of 4 means it's low levels of negative social support. And then you can see the indicators of health status as well. Here are the goodness of fit measures for the two models. Just to go quickly through this, the models had adequate fit. So these different indices, these are practical fit indices and comparative fit indices. These, some of them account for the fact that with larger sample sizes, you can sometimes overestimate the fit. So the models had good fit. They're generally over 0.9 or 0.92, whatever standard you want to use to say whether they're adequate fit. And this simply doesn't mean my models are correct. It simply means that the covariance structure of the data match is similar to the theoretical model. So this is what it looks like. If you look, starting from the right, going to the left, the rightmost would be 2010, the second is 2008, and then everything to the left is the baseline in 2006. So you can see the three latent factors, social support, social cohesion, and poor health on the far left. And those can predict depressive symptoms on the top, which is a latent factor, and then non-injurious falls on the bottom. And then you can see that the arrows on the top are depressive symptoms predicting future depressive symptoms, and on the bottom, falls predicting future falls. And then those cross flags I was talking about are the diagonal arrows between falls and depressive symptoms. So I'm going to show this in table form in a moment, but very quickly, you can see that on top, with the asterisk, it's a significant association between depressive symptoms over time, which is perhaps unsurprising, and then falls, non-injurious falls, also predict future non-injurious falls on the bottom. And then the cross flags, you can see that the first hypothesis, non-injurious falls, don't really have much of an association with future depressive symptoms. But the third hypothesis, depressive symptoms, are significantly associated with future falls. So you can see this in the table here. Those in bold are significant. So you can see that poor health predicts falls, 0.54. Social support negatively predicts depressive symptoms. Poor health positively predicts depressive symptoms at baseline. In terms of the cross legs, you can see the 0.69 there are depressive symptoms in 2006 predict future falls in 2008, but 2006 falls do not predict 2008 depressive symptoms. This is model two. I'll just race through this since it's pretty much the same thing we saw with non-injurious falls. The coefficients are slightly higher in the cross flags for depressive symptoms leading to falls, but about the same thing, and the same thing here. And here are the predicted probabilities. So if you look, the taller bars are non-injurious falls in blue, and the shorter bars in red are FRIs. So you can see in the middle of the graph that at the mean of depressive symptom levels of the respondent group in 2006, that the non-injurious fall risk is about 27%, and the FRI risk is about 11%. And when you decrease the depressive symptom levels by one standard deviation, you decrease both the NIF and FRI risk by about 2 percentage points. Now that's about 12% decrease in the NIF risk, but about a 28% decrease in the FRI risk. A one standard deviation change is about the equivalent of a change in two of the questions of the eight questions in the CESD that this survey uses on things like were you able to sleep, were you depressed in the past week, things like that. So if they switch two of those answers, that would be a one standard deviation change. Now that might sound like a lot to change two answers, but about 13% of the sample had that amount of change going from 2006 to 2008. So to summarize, falls and depressive symptoms predict future falls and depressive symptoms. But my first hypothesis was not correct. Falls don't predict future depressive symptoms. The first and the second were incorrect, excuse me. The third was correct, that depressive symptoms do predict future falls. It was about an 8% future NIF risk, and that should say 28% future FRI risk increase for a standard deviation change. There were some important limitations. The survey is done every 2 years, so it's quite, we don't know when the fall occurred or what period that the respondents were referring to precisely when they responded to questions about depressive symptoms. It could very well be, for instance, that after a fall, someone was depressed 3 months later, but then 2 years later, that's not measurable in the survey. There was some dropout in the survey as well, and it was true when I ran some analysis, some crosstabs, that those who dropped out were slightly, a greater percentage of those were more depressed than those who didn't drop out. So there is some potential bias there. But I think that would tend to lead to conservative estimates, possibly. And the model doesn't demonstrate causal relationships. All it does is provide another way to look at this, these relationships, which hasn't been done before and may move us a little further in trying to understand risk predictors of falls. In terms of the implications, I suggested one reason why depressive symptoms don't change after a fall. It seems surprising to me, certainly, that someone who falls and has a hip fracture and has a life expectancy of 1 year, you might expect that they would become depressed to some extent. So why not? It could just be that the conditions leading up to a fall, you know, were already dramatic enough that someone became depressed prior to that, so those were already measured in the study, perhaps. It could be that continuity theory suggests that people just sort of stay pretty much even when it comes to mental health, even if they've experienced, you know, big issues like a fall. And also, as I said, the survey may not capture temporary changes in depressive symptoms. And the other implication, there are a lot of falls risk assessments. The American Geriatric Society has a recommended assessment, but it doesn't mention depressive symptomatology or depression. RAND has some measures that are recommended for falls as well, and these are two of the most widely used measures by practitioners, but these don't formally mention depressive symptomatology, and I think this study suggests that these are important risk predictors on the order of many of the other well-known risk predictors of falls. So policy-wise, it would seem somewhat imperative, particularly given that this study shows that it's not only an increase in falls in the subsequent study wave, but it remains high over two waves later. It actually increases, that this is an important risk predictor to account for. So that is it. Any questions? Any questions about the model or implications? Anything unclear? Yes?
So, does the data set have any more detailed information related to the type of fall where it occurs?
Yeah, so this survey, it doesn't have additional information. It says how many times did someone fall in the past 2 years. Was it a non-injurious or injurious fall? Unfortunately, this study data can be linked with Medicare data, so you can use claims data and external cause of injury codes to get the place and mechanism of injury. But I decided not to. I used that for another study, but for this one, it just seemed that the sensitivity might be pretty high with the claims data, but you're going to miss out on a lot using that data. So I decided to go with self-report here, but it's a real limitation in terms of understanding a bit more of what you're talking about and getting more granular. know. That's a really good question. I don't think it would be controlled for here. I did another study. This is from my dissertation. The third study was a cost study using the claims data, and I did look at seasonality, and there were some trends, and I had a control group, so I think those secular trends would have been accounted for, but here I'm not sure they would have been accounted for. So that's something I might look into, but again, I can't look into it because I just don't know when they happen. It's just a drawback with the HRS data, as good as it is. You know, it could very well be the case. I said it could be a two-year lag between the measurement of one and the other. It could actually be even more than that, because when they're asking in 2008 about depressive symptoms, it's asking about the last month prior to the survey. But then they're asking about falls, which could have happened sort of even further back. So I don't, you know, it's just hard to account for stuff like that. I think the advance of this, if there is an advance with this, is that you know, using other data sets, we realize we can actually use these sorts of models and they have adequate fit, and who knew, you know, and so maybe someone else can, maybe me, maybe I'll do another study. Anything else? Okay, thank you.